Call your attention this evening to the Old Testament. I want you to go to Judges 9. Judges 9. The title of the message tonight, I really had a hard time getting settled on. I wanted to call it Run for Your Life. Don't Stand Next to the Wall. God ultimately wins. And I settled on King of the Trees. You say, boy, that's a lot of different thoughts. Well, it is. Starting Wednesday, I'm like 99% sure this is going to happen. I'm going to begin on Wednesday nights. And for about 38 Wednesday nights, I'm going to be preaching on a parable of Jesus. There's about 38 of them. Some of them may take more than one night. And so I'm thinking that for the better part of the next 12 months, probably at least 10 months, on Wednesdays, I'm going to be talking and preaching about the parables. We'll take every one of the parables that Jesus talked about. But I don't know if you know this or not, but parables are not the only, or Jesus is not the only person that spoke in parables. There are parables in the Old Testament as well. And as I've begun to kind of get geared up for this and begin to try to get my thoughts in order for the next 38, 40 weeks, whatever it ends up being, I came across this story, and I know that I've read it because I've preached about the judges. I think I preached 4 or 5 years ago about, I think it was maybe 8 or 10 of the judges. I'd have to look back and see. But I came across this story that is in Judges 9. And we're going to get to it in just a moment, but it begins at the end of a man's life that you know. The man's name is Gideon. Now, you may not know this, but Gideon has another name in the Bible. His name is Jerubbaal. And in chapter 9, he is called Jerubbaal. He's not really referred to as Gideon. And we know that it's the same man because chapter 8, the last verse, verse 35 says, neither showed they kindness to the house of Jerubbaal, namely Gideon, according to all the goodness which he had showed unto Israel. In other words, these people were an ungrateful lot. And so when he dies, they have to choose someone to take his place. And so we begin in verse number 1, and we see a man, and his name is Abimelech, and he has got a choice here. I've got nothing alliterated tonight. I wrote 4 things down that I want you to remember about him. First of all, Abimelech had a chance. I believe that there will be nobody that will ever stand before God, and God will not be able to say, well, I gave them a shot. I know that I've heard people say things like this. Well, you mean to tell me if somebody in some distant part of the world never heard the name of Jesus, if they die without hearing the name of Jesus, they would go to hell? It's exactly right. The reason that I preach that is because Romans 1 says that they are without excuse. If someone looks at the light that they have been given through creation, and they know that there's something greater, and they would like to know the God that made that, I think they will come across the missionary. They will come across some type of radio, television broadcast. In our modern day, the internet. You may not realize this, but just because people live in certain nations that have poverty, they still have access to the internet. You can see that with some of the videos that are put out, and they're all over YouTube, things that come out of India, Japan, Russia, a lot of different places. And so everybody has a chance, and Abimelech has a chance. Now, who is he? Well, it tells us about him in verse 1 and in verse 2. It says that Abimelech was the son of Jerubbaal. He went to Shechem unto his mother's brethren. Now, his mother was one of Gideon's concubines. Gideon had multiple wives. I don't understand that biblically. I know that in the beginning, in Genesis, it was Adam and Eve. It wasn't Adam, Eve, Sarah, Lila, Diana, Patricia. It didn't have all of those. It was one woman, but ultimately they began to accept the ways of other nations. And so another verse that sometimes gives me pause is that in times past, sometimes God winked at sin. Don't always understand that. It's one of the things I'm hoping I'm going to get a real good explanation for. Not that God owes me one, but when I get to heaven, I'd like to know that. And so you've got Gideon, Jerubbaal, who has many wives and some concubines, and he has 70 sons. That's a lot of boys, all right? A lot of testosterone in that group. So you've got Gideon, he has a concubine, she has a son, and his name is Abimelech. And so he comes from a background where that his father was famous. His father is mentioned in Hebrews 11, the Hall of Faith. Again, that causes me issues. Gideon, he's just mentioned there. That's all you can say. Regardless of what the man did privately, he's mentioned there. But then again, Samson's mentioned there. So you've got all of these people that were not perfect by a million miles, but yet they are righteous in the sight of God. But then again, I think of my own life and I think of your life, and I'm thinking the only reason that we are righteous is because we have the imputed righteousness of Christ. Were it not for the imputed righteousness of Christ, which means that the account that he had, he gave us the payment to our account. He could pay it all. We could pay nothing. So Jesus paid it all. All to him I owe. Sin had left its crimson stain. He washed me white as snow, as the old hymn goes. And so you've got Abimelech. He goes to a place called Shechem unto his mother's brethren. So he's going to his mama's family. All right? When I think of South Georgia, that's really what I think about, is I think about my mama's family. I think about the farm that I used to live on until I was five when we moved to Savannah. Then I think about the farm that we visited about every 2 weeks. Then I think about the summers that I would stay on that farm. I think about the family that still lives on that farm. I think about all of those things. That was my mama's people. That's what I think about. And it says that he communed with them, or he talked with them, and with all the family of the house of his mother's father, saying, "Speak, I pray you, in the ears of all the men of Shechem." So his granddaddy's talking. "I want you to speak to the men of Shechem, whether it is better for you either that all the sons of Jerubbaal," which are his daddy's people. He's talking to his mama's people. "All the sons of Jerubbaal, which are 70, that's 70, reign over you, or that one reign over you. Remember also that I am your bone and your flesh." So in other words, they're saying, you got to choose. Do you want to be with us? Now remember, your mama was one of us. You going to be on our side? We're your flesh, we're your bone. Or are you going to choose Zerubbabel and those other 70 boys that you could rule over, or they could rule you? So what are you going to do? And so we see that he had a chance, he had a decision that he had to make. And do you know there's a lot of decisions that we can make in our lives. Some of them are little bitty decisions. If you make enough little bitty decisions, it'll ultimately get you to a bad place. But there are some big decisions that you can make that will cause you trouble the rest of your life. We're going to see one of those at the end of the message tonight. And so we see that he is a man that had a chance. When you get to verse number 5, this is the choice that he made. He went into his father's house at Ophrah, not Winfrey. All right? There's a place called Ophrah. And slew his brethren, the sons of Zerubbabel, being 70 persons upon one stone. That means that he gathered, I guess the men of Shechem helped him out with this. They gathered all of his brothers together. There's only one exception. You'll see this in a moment. There's only one boy that survives, and they go to one particular spot. There's like a big flat stone, and what do? They kill all 70 of these brothers. So he made his choice. This choice will haunt him the rest of his life. Nobody will really trust him much in his life, and rightly so. Why? Because why would you make that choice? There have been times when I've had people say, well, you got to make this choice or that choice, and I'm going, I'm not making either one of them choices. You're not going to force me into making one or the other when I don't want to make one or the other. And so you've got this man, and he kills his brothers, notwithstanding, yet Jotham, the youngest son of Zerubbabel. So his baby brother, the youngest of the young, does not die. And why is that? Because he hid himself. And so you've got one young man that gets out of Dodge, hence the title, Run for Your Life. And so we see that he is on the run. Now, we know that Abimelech, we know that he ruled for 3 years. We know that. The text tells us this. And so the second thing that we see begins in verse number 7. You have Jotham, which is the youngest boy, he comes back. Now, I don't know how close he got. I don't know if he was, like within handshaking distance. My guess is probably not. And so, verse number 7, it says, and when they told it to Jotham, he went and stood in the top of Mount Gerizim, and lifted up his voice and cried. So in other words, it seems as though he's a little ways away. And he goes, let me tell you a story. And it says that, hearken unto me, ye men of Shechem, that God may hearken unto you. And this is the title of the message. He begins telling them about trees. He said, the trees went forth on a time to anoint a king over them. And they said unto the olive tree, reign thou over us. Verse 9. But the olive tree said unto them, should I leave my fatness? If you don't know what an olive tree looks like, sometimes those jokers can get fat. There is one that's like 1,500 years old over next to the Mount of Olives. They actually have it encased now over near the church that's not far from there. And it's a big old tree. You couldn't reach around it. Probably two of us couldn't reach around it. That's how big this thing is. Should I leave my fatness, wherewith by me they honor God and man, and go to be promoted over the trees? The word promoted there has the idea of waving as a king would wave. So you've got the olive tree, and the olive tree goes, no, I'm not going to do that. Well, the story continues. And the trees said to the fig tree, come thou and reign over us. But the fig tree said unto them, should I forsake my sweetness and my good fruit and go to be promoted over the trees like a king would wave? Should I do that? No, I shouldn't do that. Well, then said the trees unto the vine, come thou and reign over us. And the vine said unto them, should I leave my wine, which cheereth God and man, and go to be promoted over the trees? In other words, you've had the olive tree that wouldn't do it. The fig tree wouldn't do it. Now the grapevine will not do it. Verse 14. Then said all the trees unto the bramble, come thou and reign over us. Now remember, you got the picture here. You've got Jotham, and he is up on the top of Mount Gerizim, and he is telling this, so they're hearing it, and they're hearing about the olive tree. They're hearing about the fig tree. They're thinking, what is this lunatic talking about? They're hearing about the grapevine. And now he's talking about a bramble. And the bramble said unto the trees, if in truth you anoint me king over you, then come and put your trust in my shadow. In other words, make yourself subservient. Come and get under my branches. And if not, let fire come out of the bramble and devour the cedars of Lebanon. Now, in the parable, that is ultimately going to be where that his anger is kindled against a group of these people. And so, Jotham is telling the story of the trees. This is considered a parable. So what is a parable? It is a story that relates a truth. Sometimes it can be a simile, sometimes it could be a metaphor. Sometimes it's a similitude. You've got these various things that are used so that we can picture things. And that's what we're going to be doing for about 38 to 40 weeks. We're going to be doing that on Wednesdays as we look at the parables. And so we see the meaning of this now, though, beginning in verse 16. In verse 16 it says, now therefore, if you have done truly and sincerely, in other words, Jotham has come back and he's going, now if you've done this, in that you have made Abimelech king, and if you have dealt with Jerubbaal and his house, in other words, the 70 other brothers, and have done unto him according to the deserving of his hands, for my father fought for you. Jotham is a good son. He is reverencing Gideon. My father fought for you and adventured his life far. When he went against the Midianites, he only had 300. He was taking all kind of chances, and he delivered you out of the hand of Midian. And so you see that he gives the meaning of this story. Verse 18 says that, and you are risen up against my father's house this day. You've slain his sons, 70, upon one stone, and have made Abimelech, the son of his maidservant, king over the men of Shechem, because he is your brother. In other words, he was our brother too. And you've made him, because he was willing to kill us, now you've made him king. And so verse 19 continues, says, if you have then dealt truly and sincerely with Zerubbabel and with his house this day, then rejoice ye in Abimelech, and let him rejoice also in you. In other words, if that's what you want, that's good for you. You'll see what's coming. That's basically what he's saying right here. Then verse number 20 says, but if not, let fire come out from Abimelech, devour the men of Shechem, the house of Milo. Let the fire come out from the men of Shechem and from the house of Milo and devour Abimelech. So what happens after that? He runs. He's run for his life. That's the first rejected title. Verse 21, Jotham ran away and fled and went to Beer and dwelt there for fear of Abimelech, his brother. So we see the story of the trees. We see the meaning of the trees. So it brings us to the third thing. When you have somebody that is of a character such as Abimelech, the honeymoon is short-lived. Look with me at verse 22. And Abimelech had reigned 3 years over Israel. Now I want you to notice verse 25. And the men of Then God sent an evil spirit between Abimelech and the men of Shechem. Sometimes you get what you think you want, only to realize you wish you didn't have it. I'm thinking about an old guy we had in our church way back eons ago. This has been 40 years ago. And his name was Bill. I had a wonderful, wonderful wife. She doted on that old man. I mean, if the coffee pot was right there and he was right here, he would say, May, would you come and get me a cup of coffee? Now, all he had to do was just reach and get it. I'll do it, baby. I'll take care of it. So she would pour his coffee. I mean, she treated him just like he was King Bill. All right? May got sick and died. And old Bill got lonely. And it wasn't long before he started hanging out at the Waffle House at the front of his road. And it wasn't long before he got married to another lady. What he didn't realize is he didn't just get her, he got the whole bunch. And you talk about a bunch of losers. I mean, it was ugly from the get-go. And all I'm thinking about over all of these now four decades is all I'm thinking is he was lonely and he jumped out of the frying pan into the fire. That's what I'm thinking. He went through the rest of his life and he was a miserable old man until he finally died and I had his funeral. And so sometimes we want something, we think we want it, we got to get it, only to find out we really don't need it. And you've had that happen to you, and I've had it happen to me. I got the bright idea one year that I needed to buy a bucket truck. You say, what do you need a bucket truck for? I just needed one because I thought it would be good for me to zip up to the top of the house, pressure wash it. You could spray it while you're up there once it dried. And you'd have a bucket truck that would just, you know, you'd be all over the place. I bought a bucket truck from one of Brother Don's buddies down in Mansfield. I think it was $3,500 for that thing. Should have known something at $3,500. That thing would run half the time, and the bucket would work about a third of the time. And you'd try to operate those things, and it would do this. It would go. And so I decided that Chad needed to go up in it. And so I would run him up, and then it'd be like, don't run me in the house because this thing's going to be beating me on this house. And so we were able to do a little work on that thing, and then it sat behind my shop for 3 years. And finally, I sold that bucket truck. I think I got $800 for it. I paid $3,500 for it. I think we used it twice, and neither time was successful. You know, I could have paid somebody to pressure wash that house. And I could have paid somebody to spray the high end of that house. But no, I needed, quote unquote, a bucket truck. I needed that bucket truck like I need another hole in my head. But I got it, baby. You got to be careful about what you want when you don't need it. And the men of Shechem, they find this out. Look with me at verse, we see that God sent an evil one. Now look at verse 25. And the men of Shechem set liars in wait for him. That's a trap. A liar is a trap. In the top of the mountains, and they're trying to provoke him. And what are they doing? They're robbing all that came along that way by them, and it was told to Abimelech. In other words, these guys are not following the guy that they wanted to be their king. And so the men of Shechem, they have this plan. Now, in verse 28, there's a man named Gaal. And Gaal, he is evidently one of the leaders and maybe has a desire to be rebellious. This is not going to work out well for him. And Gaal, the son of Ebed, said, "Who is Abimelech? And who is Shechem?" In other words, we'll do what we want to do. Nobody's going to tell us what to do. Who's Abimelech that we should serve him? Is he not the son of Jerubbaal and Zebul his officer? Serve the men of Hamor, the father of Shechem, for why should we serve him? So in other words, we see that this man is now mocking. Who is he? He's nobody. It reminds me of these ball players whenever they're playing against somebody or somebody that's in a boxing match or one of these MMA matches. You know, they start running their mouth and, you know, and they want to start fighting before the match actually begins, you know, and they try to intimidate only to realize that maybe that wasn't a good idea. And so you've got Gaal, and he's gonna find out, and he ultimately dies. We see that he is beaten in verse 38. In verse 38, it says that, if you'll go to that, there we go, that Zebul said unto him, "Where is now thy mouth?" In other words, Zebul is one of the servants of Abimelech. So he's going, "Go ahead and say it now that we're here, not at a distance." "Well, go ahead and say it. Where's your mouth now? Who is Abimelech? Didn't you say that? Who should serve him? Didn't you say that? Is not this the people that thou hast despised? Isn't this the people that you've been robbing? Who are you? Go out, I pray now, and fight with them." And so we see in verse 38 that he is beaten. If you go down to verse 40, it tells us that Abimelech chased him. And he, that is Gaal, fled before him. And many were overthrown and wounded, even unto the entering of the gate. And so we see that the honeymoon is over, and now they are about to be in a city, and in verse number 50, it tells us what that city is. Then Abimelech, he went to Thebez, and he encamped against Thebez, and he took it. In other words, Abimelech, as vile of a man as he was, he was a fighter. He was a warrior. I've been listening to a podcast on the history of the Roman Empire. Quick little segments, only about 12 to 15 minutes, I think, each. And so from the house to the church or back, I can probably listen to almost the whole one. And they talk about all these different people. And to be honest with you, I have a hard time keeping the name straight, especially when it has some type of Latin ending to it. All right. But they were talking about, some of them, how that even with a third of the force that they were going against, because of the plans and the ability to stir the men, that they were able to secure great victories. That's kind of the picture that I have of Abimelech. Even though he was the son of a concubine, he had Gideon's mind when it came to fighting. And so you have Thebes that is surrounded. Well, the people that are there in that city, they began to run. Verse 51. But there was a strong tower within the city. That's something that is a very common thing in ancient times. They would build a tower, and it would be fortified, much like a secure place inside the city limits. The city limits may have had a small wall and may have had a gate, but then there would be something to be extra secure. And so they have a strong tower that is within Thebes, and thither fled all the men, or there fled all the men and the women, and all they of the city, and shut it to them, and gat them up to the top of the tower. In other words, they have now gone to the final sanctuary. They are surrounded. Their city's been taken. Everything is now defeated except this one tower. One of the things that you will see if you go to Israel, you will probably end up going to a place called Masada. Masada was the last refuge of the Jewish people when they rebelled against the Romans. They had already fled Jerusalem. They basically forfeited the city. They went to one of the palaces that Herod the Great had made way up on top of the mountain. It was considered to be an impregnable fortress. Going up, you had to walk up a little trail. It was called the Snake Path. And you could only have two people at a time that could go up. And as they were walking up, the people that would be up top, they would begin to throw hot fireballs made out of tar. They would throw rocks. And they would be throwing that on those people. And so the Romans basically encamped about it. Now, it had a water supply, because one of the things that Herod had done was he had brought some aqueducts from about 10 miles away, and they were able to do it with gravity, and it would come in to the lower part, and then they would take animals and they would pull it up to the top and they would pour it in, and it would just kind of be water all through. And so water was not a problem. The problem was the Romans. Not only were they killers, they were engineers. These engineers, they decided, what we will do is we'll make a ramp and we'll just walk up to it. And so they began by taking dirt and rocks, and they would pile it up, and they began to build an incline on the lowest wall of Masada. And I mean, day by day, thousands of Roman soldiers, they're working. They're not fighting. They're building. And finally, as they get closer, they began to try to throw things at them. But the problem is, they began by using what we would think of as an instrument of war, which was a tower, but it was mobile. And they would push it up the hill, and it had like metal on the front, like shields, so that things would bounce off of it. Fire would not burn it. And they kept building, kept building, kept building. And finally, they built this thing to where it was well over 200 feet. And they got to the wall. And then they opened it when they were next to the wall. And with a battering ram began to boom, boom, boom. And they began to burst through the wall. And the Jews in Masada knew that by morning, the wall would be breached. And so the story of Masada is simply this, that they chose 10 men. All of those 10 men were to go through and kill everybody that was on top, men, women, children. And then one of those men would kill the other nine, and then the last one would commit suicide. The reason that we know that story is because there were two women and five kids that hid behind a water cistern, and the Jewish men that were doing the killing did not find them. The Romans found them when they got in, and that's how they learned the story of Masada. But the point is that it was a siege. They would starve them out, they would build, and ultimately fear would begin more and more and more. And the next thing you know, these people are petrified. That's what we have here at Thebes. You've got a siege that has taken place, and you've got Abimelech that's at the bottom, and he begins to try to burn the door to get in. But something happens. Go to the end of the chapter, and I want you to look at verse 50. Let's look at verse 53. Let's go to 53. And a certain woman. That the last point, if you're taking notes, is the bramble. Not the olive, not the fig, not the vine. The bramble that Jotham talks about dies. A certain woman who's up on top of the tower. That's where they all get to. They're throwing things off the top. And she has a part of a millstone. Now, a millstone was used for grinding flour in the South, and I'm sure probably in the North as well. 150 years ago, they would have what was called a grist mill. There used to be a grist mill at Stone Mountain. Debbie and I had no money, so we'd go sit at the grist mill. And so up in Helen, they have that. Have you ever heard this phrase, and this is free? Have you ever heard the phrase, put your nose to the grindstone? Y'all know what it means? I heard somebody say, mm-hmm. What it means is this. When they were grinding milling the grain, they didn't want to get going too fast because the grain would begin to burn with the friction. And so they would put their nose to the grindstone and they would smell it. And if it had any type of burnt odor to it, they would slow it down. And so you had to be paying attention to grinding. If you didn't, you would ruin the product. And so these people are on top of this tower. Men are up there, women are up there, and they're doing anything they can to try to get anybody they can. And Abimelech, he gets up next to where the door's at, and this woman, I don't know if she knows him. I don't know if she recognized maybe his uniform that he may have had on. I don't know if he had a specific turban that he was wearing. But I know this. I know that she took a piece of a millstone and she dropped it on his head. Now, that would be rough. But can you imagine the times in which he lived? You remember that the way that women were thought of, they basically were thought of as property. They were thought of as being weak. They were not considered to be really of a great value. But yet God chose those women in certain instances to defeat evil men. There's another story in the book of Judges. We won't go to it. But how many of you remember Sisera? You remember the guy that got his head nailed to the ground with a tent peg? Yeah, a woman did that. This woman is unnamed. But she drops this on his head, and I think this is funny. I want you to look with me at verse 54. This is on his mind. Now, he's dying, all right? He's dying, and I want you to listen to the pride and arrogance in this man as he's dying. Then he called hastily unto the young man, his armor bearer. Come here, come here, come here. I ain't got much time left. Come here, come here. He said unto him, draw thy sword and slay me. Why? That the men say not of me, a woman slew him. In other words, don't let a woman be the one that kill me. You kill me. And so the young man thrust him through, and he died. 3 years. That's a short time. But he goes from killing his own daddy's family to ticking off other people, and ultimately there's a woman in the city of Thebes that takes him out. You say, well, what do you think about that? Look at verse 56. Thus God. God can do what he wants to, when he wants to do it, how he wants to do it. Thus God rendered the wickedness of Abimelech, which he did unto his father, and slaying his 70 brethren. In other words, the chickens have come home to roost. He took his brothers out, and now he's taken out by armor bearer, but he would have died from a brain hemorrhage. And so you've got Abimelech. Now, is that the end of the story? I want you to go with me to 2 Samuel chapter 11, verse 21. 2 Samuel 11, 21. I hope I wrote this down right. Who smote Abimelech, the son of Jerubbaal? That's another rendition of Jerubbaal. Did not a woman cast a piece of millstone upon him from the wall? In other words, the historians in Israel, they knew how he died. That he died in Thebes. Why went you nigh unto the wall? Then say thou, thy servant Uriah the Hittite is dead also. Now, you remember Uriah? You remember that situation? Bathsheba was married to Uriah. And so here it is, hundreds of years later, and you've got the story of Abimelech being brought up at the time of David and Uriah, when David is supposed to be going to battle, because it was the time when kings went forth to battle. But yet now they bring up Abimelech. Why is that? Well, there's a practical reason, hence another sermon title, Don't Get Too Close to the Wall, which is practical. If you get close to the wall, somebody will drop a millstone in your head. If you're going to fight, do it from a distance so that you got some maneuverability. My grandson just turned 16, and we've given him an old truck that I've driven from 2015. In the last two or three years, Debbie's been driving it. So we gave him this old truck. It's a good truck, but it's an old truck. And I told him, as we were driving with him one day and he was practicing, I said, Carter, man, let me tell you something. I said, a state patrolman told me this when I was 16 years old. He said, always have an out. He said, when you're driving, he said, always have an out. You look out and you see what's in front of you, and you make decisions now about what's way out there. Don't get on somebody's rear end. They start, then stop, and then you hit them. You give yourself plenty of room. You give yourself an out. Well, can I tell you that in the Christian life, we need to use wisdom like that as well? We need to give ourselves an out. So what's the spiritual application? We ought to be careful how we treat people. We ought to be careful the way that we deal with our family. We ought to be careful with the way that we deal with people that we're in charge of. We ought to be kind people and not hard people. There's enough trouble in this old world that what we need to do is we just simply need to say, you know what? I just want to do it like the Lord wants me to. Now, there's one other verse, we won't go back to it, but there's one other verse that I just touched on a minute. It said, but God gave him an evil spirit. So twice in this chapter, we see the name of God invoked. God can get our attention when he needs to. Abimelech had a chance at being a better man, and he blew it. Why? Because he was selfish. He wanted to be the king. He was the bramble that said, yeah, come under here underneath my limbs, underneath my shadow, and then I'll be your king. He wanted that job. Be careful when people want stuff and they want it too bad. It may be that they're not good folks.